Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Hello, beautiful. How
chatty,
are you?
Chatty Kelly. Going over before the time.
I'm cranky, Dr. Deborah.
I love that, though, when we can just be open and honest and just say it like it is. I was like that, remember, like a couple weeks ago? I just was in it.
There's no reason for you not to be cranky on an ongoing basis.
Why? What do you mean? Oh, because of what I'm dealing with.
Your
children. Of course. Yes, exactly. My children are tough. But yeah, so how are things?
You have to tell me what you told me a few minutes ago.
Oh, in the bathroom?
About what you asked him.
So my younger son, he was 5, he gave me a hard time this morning, and he was great with my parents when we were in Paris.
Right.
Like, so good that I don't even know if they believed me that, you know, he's tough with us. And I said, why were you so good? Why were you so good with Mimi and Pop-Pop? And he said, well, Mimi and Pop-Pop gave me a lot of food. And that was his answer. He's obsessed with food.
And he was so sincere, right?
He was dead serious.
Oh,
dead serious.
Like the perfect answer.
Like, yeah, why is that not rational? That, like, if someone gives me a lot of food, I'm going to be great, you know? So it was very funny.
Oh, my goodness. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. I went to a comedy club on Saturday night.
Fun.
Saw Marc Maron. I don't know if you know who he is.
I am so out of date.
Oh, he's really funny. He's in a lot of shows now, but he was hilarious. My friend has been wanting me to, like, see him and hear him for a long time, and it's kind of been in the back burner, and then he kind of came on, and he's like my new obsession, so it was great.
You're actually my only connection to the media world.
To
entertainment.
And I feel like I'm like the worst. Like, I feel like my kids are even better about, like, swiping and knowing what's up, and they probably could do our Instagram account better than I could.
They should be doing our social media for us.
Yeah, exactly.
I suck at it. You're pretty good at it. Speaking of social media, this whole thing with Facebook.
I know, it's crazy.
Now, are you
going
to go online? You can go on Facebook to their help center and find out if any of your information. But what information could they possibly have that could be compromised? They don't have your social security number.
Right.
So
they might have a phone number, but yeah.
What's the ramifications? That's this part I don't really understand.
Yeah, we'll find out more, I guess.
We will. Some people are saying that he's not sounding very sincere in his...
In his trials?
Yes, although the stock went way up today. So,
oh, it did.
Go figure. People are just strange. I love you all, but we are a strange lot.
I'm so not good. See, at least you're much better about the news. Like, I don't really follow so much. Like,
KNX,
I have a friend
22 minutes and it'll give you the world.
Yeah, I have a friend who's like, it's so funny, her name's Christina. I call her Christina News Network because
she knows
CNN.
Everything.
She just knows everything. So I'll literally go to her and be like, hey, what's happening? What's going on? She's like my filter.
So you're going to hate this, but went to the racetrack over the weekend,
did.
Saw the ponies, but it was so beautiful. Such a beautiful day. It was like perfect.
Yeah.
We had a picnic and it was really nice. And then went on a hike on Sunday, and there's a horse ranch. This was so sweet that I had leased a horse for my daughter when she was a young girl at this ranch called Two Winds Ranch.
Okay.
So there's a hiking area around there.
Yeah.
But after the hike, we walked through the boarding place, and there were at least 100 horses. And I got to pet each one. I went
That's
and
so
said
sweet.
Hello, blew a little air in their nose because that makes them think that you're friendly. And some of them just have the most adorable personalities.
That's sweet. Yes. Animals are the best. They're the best. All I can say.
I love them.
So let's talk about last week.
Yes. Last week was Carolyn Costin, who's a woman that I've known for a very, very long time professionally. She's the author of 8 Keys to Recovery from an Eating Disorder. So loved her point of view. Just,
fantastic.
You know, that you work with people with eating disorders by embracing and making a relationship with their healthy self.
Yes.
You know, it's not about judging the eating disorder in any way or not even seeing that as the problem. Just enlisting the healthfulness of somebody and where they really want to be is to have a healthy mind, a healthy body, and healthy relationship.
True. Yeah. Well, I love that because it's so true. It's like we all have that two parts to us. That's like the unhealthy part and the healthy part. And it's just a question of how can we embrace more of the healthy part and make that stronger. She was wonderful.
Absolutely. Okay, since you were the one who made this connection
for
our wonderful guest today, you do the intro.
Okay, I'm super, super excited to have Catherine Woodward Thomas. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Conscious Uncoupling, Five Steps to Living Happily Ever After.
Which Even is, After.
Yeah, oh, is it, oh, I'm sorry. that's so funny. I missed that. Interesting. Even After, which was nominated for a Books for a Better Life Award and the national bestseller Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life. She's also a licensed marriage and family therapist and teacher to thousands from all corners of the world in her virtual and in-person learning communities. She is the originator of the conscious uncoupling process made famous by Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin, as well as creator of the Calling in the One 49 Days to Love online course. To date, Catherine has trained and credentialed hundreds of people as certified conscious uncoupling coaches and as certified Calling in the One coaches. Welcome, Catherine.
Ah, thank you. Great to be here with you.
And the greatest title on the planet.
I know,
I love
it.
I just love that. So clever. You said you're a wordsmith.
I love words. In my next life, I'm going to be a linguist.
You so may cool. have already been one.
I'm one of those rare people who loves writing my own books.
Yeah.
Most therapists don't really, they're like, I'll do it as a, chore.
But I can relate. You can relate, too.
I love it, too.
Yeah.
I love
the
it, too.
The writing process
look
is,
at all of us writers.
Is delightful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What inspired you at what age maybe to become an author?
I never knew that I could write until I wrote my first book.
Really?
So what inspired me to write is that I had a desire to contribute. Mm. I had something I wanted to share with people. Something happened in my own life that was a miracle that ended suffering. I'd been questing for love my whole adult life, and I struggled with all of those insecure attachment patterns. Push-pull dynamics. I was both love-avoidant and love-addicted. Mm-hmm. I was, all ends of that spectrum for decades, really. And it was really through becoming a therapist, working with people, 12-step programs, transformational programs, spiritual disciplines all together that I naturally kind of outgrew it. And I got to this place where I understood the power of declaring a future that is not about the past. But that is about the possibilities that are present.
Beautiful.
And so when I was 41, I called up a friend from this group. We were all setting intentions together and supporting each other. And I said, I know this is kind of crazy, but I am declaring I'm going to be engaged by my 42nd birthday.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I had no prospects for a husband.
Right.
And obviously no idea how to make that happen. But she said something very, very profound that changed my life. She said, Catherine, I'm going to hold that intention with and for you if you give me permission to hold you accountable for being the woman that you would need to be in order for that to happen. And that just was such a profound gift, because instead of running out to try and find love, I went within to discover all the barriers that I may have built against it. Now, it wasn't like I was a newbie to personal development, but when you have a future that you're standing for, and you begin to define your life by that future, and you start to lean in, like, what's the development that I would need to engage? Who would I need to be being? What does my best self look like to be able to create my best relationship? Anyway, obviously, rushing to the punchline is I called in this wonderful man in this really magical way. And we had a beautiful wedding. I was engaged 2 months before my birthday.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
We got married the next year. Then I had my daughter when I was 43.
Wow.
So when that all happened, I thought, okay, I don't think that's a personal miracle. I need to write this down and track what I did to create that breakthrough. And that was the foundation for Calling in the One.
Wow.
Which was my first book.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was telling Catherine before we came on, one of my good friends, I didn't know this. She knew Catherine was coming on. She's like, Kelly, you know that's how I met my husband. I was like, what?
What?
Like, yes, that's exactly what I said. She's like, yeah, I did it twice. She's like, I did the program twice. And her husband is so perfect for her. It's like really funny. It's like I mean, they just feel so spiritually connected, and so it's amazing.
And by the way, Catherine is completely receptive to taking calls, so if anybody would like to call in, please do so at 323-203-0815, because she's one of our most famous authors on the show.
Thank you.
We've had great authors, but this is really a special treat.
But I love what you stand for, too. I love your energy, because I met Catherine at the spiritual group, and she's just got this like Zen Buddha feel like I could be like meditating on a beach right now.
Oh, that's so lovely. I love that. Thank you. I love that feedback. Thank you.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm so curious to find out more about Calling in the One also, but I know we're here today to talk about conscious we've got both
bookends, don't we?
Perfect.
Yes. Okay. Great.
So why don't we start with Calling in the One, because that's usually what we have to have before we can uncouple. Sure.
Right. Well, or actually, I see unconscious uncoupling as the precursor to Calling in the One, because we don't want to bring unfinished business into our next relationship, because it's going to limit what we create with that person.
Perfect.
Okay, so both ways.
Absolutely.
It's a little like the chicken and the egg. Which one comes first?
Okay, so you pick. Which one should we?
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to talk about Calling in the One, because we're kind of on a roll with that.
Okay, let's do it. Cool. Yeah. All right. So give us some of the things that you discovered about yourself, and then what other people can do to process that.
Well, first of all, Calling in the One came out in 2004. It was the first book of its genre that talked about law of attraction and metaphysics, and there was and finding a mate. Mm. Before that, you know, spiritual books were separate from How to Find a Husband. So when that happened to me, So when that happened to me, I started to try and, you know, synthesize all of these different disciplines and modalities and things that I had been doing. But a big part of it was the metaphysics, because I would sit on my meditation cushion each morning after declaring this to my friend, and I would imagine that future was already so now. And I would, you know, feel it in my body, and I would try and get it in my senses. You know, what do the flowers smell like that my beloved is bringing to me? I particularly wanted to get pregnant. Mm. So my big image that I was working with was imagining being pregnant and waddling around the kitchen, heavy with child. Now, I'd never been pregnant before, so I could only imagine what that might feel like.
Right.
But and I would write in my journal, like, I'm pregnant, I'm 9 months pregnant, and my husband is being really supportive, and I'm acting a little crazy because my hormones are nuts, and, you know, I'm just
and
like...
And he's rubbing your feet.
And he's rubbing my feet and feeding me ice cream, and, you know, all of that.
Sure.
I mean, really getting it into the senses. But then I would ask these the questions, and this is from the visioning process that Michael Beckwith created. I would say, okay, what would I need to let go of and release from my life in order to allow this vision to come to me?
Wow.
And I would listen, and I would also ask, and who would I need to become? What would I need to embrace and cultivate in order to prepare myself to receive this vision? Now, what I find with the universe, not to get too woo-woo on anybody, but if you
if
you ask the right question, you will get answers. Mm-hmm. And I really empowered whatever impressions, whatever meetings, chance meetings, whatever someone would say to me, I was open, I was receptive. So it didn't have to be a big burning bush in the middle of my living room to get my attention. But I began to see a ton of things that were in my way. Mm. Like things like, I had an old agreement with a childhood boyfriend. I mean, not a childhood, he was my teenage boyfriend all through high school. I did have childhood boyfriend.
Me too.
I was precocious.
I'm right there with you on that one.
Me too.
5 years old.
My kindergarten report card says, I think Kathy's a little obsessed with the boys.
I love that.
I mean, I was really precocious. Anyway, but I had this boyfriend all through high school. He was wonderful. But, you know, I wanted to go in a different direction, and we had a very traumatic parting of the ways. And, you know, me being, you know, very prone to, you know, heightened peak experiences, i.e. a drama queen, I said to him, why don't you go your way?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't call me a drama queen.
Why don't you go your way, I'll go my way, and we will come together when we're in our 60s, and we will marry then.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
So there's a hook.
Okay, right. So he, of course, went and married the next girl he was with the next year. He'd have none of that. But in the back of my mind,
you were holding out.
Even long after I forgot it. And what I realized is that the agreements that we make with people serve as intentions that we set. And they are in operation. Because when you really wake up to how much we're generating our lives, that there really is no fixed future, you start to see everywhere that, I mean, even if we look today, most people who are listening right now, if you just look at your life and you think back to what you were visioning 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, you probably have a life that's pretty close to what you were wanting to create. Mm-hmm. So we're always creating our life. So if you set those agreements, it's pointing your life in a particular direction. So anyway, I remembered that. I didn't want to call him because he was still married.
Right.
But I brought him into what I call a soul-to-soul meditation.
Oh.
Where I was just, I imagined him sitting in front of me and I had a conversation. I cried a little bit. I said, I can't keep that agreement.
You released it.
Let it go.
Oh, I love this.
I completed it. And then it was soon after that I met Mark.
And he got divorced, the other one.
Well, there is more to the story.
Oh, my God, really?
No, I mean, we're going to get a little off track here.
Yeah.
But,
please.
Further down the line, I wrote to him. We ended up connecting. Mm-hmm. Somebody connected us because of calling in the one, because I write about that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he ended up making this incredible amends to me, and he was sorry, and I was sorry. We had a beautiful healing together. It was
lovely.
Really nice, and we've since had tea a couple of times. So,
That's so sweet.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
That's
awesome. And he's doing really well in his life. And the more we got to know each other, it was like, wow, thank God we didn't get married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you like realize.
I mean, we were. So anyway, so the old agreements is one of them. Resentments.
Yes.
Festering resentments. And I'll tell you why resentments. I mean, I think we all kind of know it's good to forgive and stuff, but this is the thing. As long as we are pointing the finger outside of ourselves, we are not using our energy to examine our part. Mm-hmm. And that means that we have not changed. And on some level, we know that we are liable to do this again. Mm-hmm. So we don't really trust ourselves in love. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a block to love. And the other thing is that we also don't want to punish the people that we're going to bring in.
Right.
Right? We don't want to go in with that agenda that somebody owes us something. So so I did this whole completion process around the resentments. I really ferreted resentments out. Another one was just looking at my relational field, if I was really standing for having the highest and the best love possible in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. I could not really afford to be in relationships with people where I was losing my personal power, where people, where I was kind of organizing around the weakest parts of other people. And so I had to clean up some of my relationships and get out of my codependent patterns. And mostly Well, mostly these relationships are difficult because, you know, we form these kind of toxic tie relationships where we are driven by fear, obligation, and guilt. That's fog. That's Susan Forward came up with that. And I love that too. And but we create that because we're in relationship with people who are difficult. And they do kind of go crazy if we don't give them what they want.
Yes.
When
yes.
they want it
yeah,
on their terms,
realized.
Or they are somewhat self-absorbed, and you know all of these things. It's not like we're making it up, but I always say, you know, we don't want to be organizing around the weakest parts of others. We want others to we want to train them to organize around the strengths within us. So if you're wanting to call in a great love where you're in your power and you're feeding power to each other, you have to be in your power. So you have to risk disappointing the other person or even making the other person angry to stay true to yourself and stay in your power. So there was some cleanup that I was doing. Another big one was, of course, core beliefs. And I've since spent the last 12 years immersed in kind of going down that rabbit hole of how deep these core identity wounds go when it comes to love. So it's not so much the wound. It's the meaning that we made about the wound. That I'm not a person who's lovable, that I'm always going to be alone, that, you know, men always choose other women but just want to sleep with me. You know, whatever that story is, we cultivate this whole narrative and we begin to show up in certain ways that are designed to give us feedback for whatever story we're centered in.
Makes sense.
All outside of conscious awareness. So in calling in the one, we unpack all of these beliefs and we have, you know, people really start to challenge them and get in relationship with the part of the self that's kind of stuck in that story so that you can really wake up to the true you and form
it's
relationship from there.
When you talk about core beliefs, the way you talked about it is very similar to EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, as the trauma therapy, because it's not that you forget the traumatic past. It's that you change your relationship to the traumatic past. It's what is a negative belief you still hold about yourself mm-hmm. in relation to that. So that's very similar. Yeah, it's very...
Exactly. And very then valuable. How are you generating that story? This goes mm-hmm. back to how creative we are. Mm-hmm. And most mm-hmm. of us are not aware of our creativity, but because we're not aware of it doesn't mean that it's not in operation. Gotcha. It's just that we're creating more of the same. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, mm-hmm. in a certain pattern and in a certain groove, and it's unconscious. So we want to create something. See, this is the biggest obstacle to love, because it's very hard to create outside of our identity. Those things that are within our identity to have, we can create them easily. Those are the things that come to us effortlessly. Mm-hmm. So it's when we want to say, okay, I've had this lifelong pattern of codependence and love avoidance, and I had a lot of trauma in my childhood. It's not hard to see where it comes from. And I think we've all kind of caught on to that. Anybody listening here is pretty sophisticated sure. in that regard. But it's like, well, then how do you overcome that? How do you actually create outside of that story? And so you have to begin to disidentify with that old conversation and claim a deeper truth mm-hmm. and connect with the parts of you that are not tied to that story. And you can borrow against other parts in your life, like if you're a great boss, if you're mm-hmm. If you're really an awesome friend, a really loving friend, a great parent, mm-hmm. you know, you have some wins, and it's begin to, you know, identify with yourself as someone who's actually blessed in love.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. So what about people who maybe don't have that self-awareness or can't go there? Like, do you recommend they work with somebody or talk to a friend who can get really honest with them? Like, I just have some clients who can't go there. Maybe it's too painful, or they don't want to look at it.
Well, I think calling in the one is probably for people who are willing to mm-hmm. examine themselves as the source of their experience. That's mm-hmm. where it started with yeah. me, mm-hmm. with what my friend said to me.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, for those folks, dating coaches are great.
Right.
Do you know? Then you deal with the externals. And there are a lot of people who are much more comfortable in that realm. And I think dating coaches who are doing all that external work and makeovers and this is mm-hmm. how you pace a date and this is the goal of the first date and all that stuff is beautiful contributions. Mm-hmm. So calling in the one is for those of us who have a bit of sophistication, I would say have a bit of interest and understanding that we really are generating our own experience, and how can we begin to command that in the direction that's going to bring us what we really desire.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a rule about how soon or how late someone can sleep with the person that they're very attracted
right
to?
Okay, this is not official calling in the one, because I try and steer clear of those uh-huh. kinds of things, because I'm not a dating coach,
okay,
right? I know the boundary of it. I will tell you that the older I get, the wiser I get.
And the longer the time.
Right, makes sense.
When I have told some of my clients, can you just wait 3 months? And these are the young folks.
Yeah, and they're like,
3 months?
Yeah, it's like 3 years.
It'll fall off before then.
Yeah.
Like, really? Three months? If you're thinking of spending a lifetime with somebody, that's your desire? What's in 3 months?
But think about the young people. They're so used to that instant gratification. It's ridiculous.
I think it's almost completely expected somewhere within the first 3 dates that you got to put out or get out. It's terrible.
And I think if you talk to a lot of men, there is that expectation.
Yeah.
4 dates is a long time to them. You know, it's really interesting.
But I love what you're saying. I think it's so true. I mean, this is pacing and being aware, self-aware, and being aware of the other person, because I'm sure some people call in the one and they call in the wrong one.
Yeah. Well, if you don't do that inner shifting, you will.
Right.
It's predictable. Or it might not be the wrong one, but it's certainly going to be somebody that you're getting, not the best one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you call in David?
You know, it's so funny. I was thinking as you were talking. So I met my husband online, and I remember, so I kind of had like a wild year. I moved out to LA. I'm like, I'm going to become an actress. I'm going to have a great time. And I really did. And then kind of towards the end of the year, I'm like, all right, I think I'm kind of done. And I said, the next guy that I'm going to be intimate with will be the one. And so interesting about the intention. And yeah, I dated, and you know, we didn't get too intimate until my husband. Yeah. But what's even weirder too is my friend, and she's not like, I'm sort of the one to be like, oh my God, that could be your husband. She's not like that. And she saw his picture and she said, that's going to be your husband.
Aww.
And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah. So it was interesting.
So maybe she set the intention too.
Like
maybe
it was like we did. All combined. It was like we need to get Kelly married.
So yeah. So that's what happened, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So I have this wonderful husband, this beautiful daughter. I write Calling in the One. It becomes a national bestseller within 4 months. It's my first book.
Wow.
I didn't even know how to get a book published. Even the energy of Calling in the One and how it got out there was kind of law of attraction, because I'm just writing it because I want to contribute, and I'm leading day-long workshops, and 10 people come, and you know, and then they want to share it with their friends, and they ask, can you write it down? So I do, and somebody comes to me and says, do you need an agent? And I have this agent, and connected us. And so I wrote the first chapter and a little mini book proposal, not knowing what I was doing. She said, she called me 3 months later, I can't stand your book proposal, but your first chapter just changed my life.
Oh, wow. Suck at the proposal, but right. The meat and potatoes was right there. Yeah.
So all of these blessings are coming in, right? Uh-huh. And I opened a center in LA, and hundreds of people were coming, and then we went online, and we were one of the first ones to be teaching online. Wow. And did Calling in the One classes. So thousands of people start to come. And then 10 years into the marriage, I got a divorce.
Wow.
Which is not what you're expecting to hear.
Not at all. Look at Deborah's face.
Happily ever after story. I had like the perfect happily ever after story, except it wasn't.
Oh my God.
So I had a crisis on my hand.
Yeah.
Right? So the one thing that we did beautifully is that we knew about intention setting. So we set an intention that we were going to make sure that our daughter had a really happy childhood.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And that became the organizing principle of our separation. And the way that we ended up doing it ended up becoming now conscious uncoupling.
This is amazing.
Five steps
she
to living happily,
even after.
Oh my God, I love
that. That is wonderful. It's a good story.
Well, I'll tell you something. I mean, one of the first things that happens, I think, for most of us when we're getting divorced or we're having a big breakup, you don't even have to have gone down the aisle to be completely traumatized in a breakup. But I think we feel socially embarrassed.
Yeah,
we feel like we have failed. Mm-hmm. We feel very vulnerable,
sure.
And of course, I felt that way, and maybe twice as much because here I am as you know the example of love for everybody.
Sure,
but it made me curious. At one point, I thought to myself, "Do you think you're doing something wrong?" And the answer was no. Mm-hmm. I think that I have courage because I'm living true to myself. I'm not gonna. Mm-hmm. Let my fear of losing my career dominate how I'm living my life. I need to live a true life. Mm-hmm. And then I said, asked myself another question. I said, what is thinking you then? Why are you feeling so ashamed? Mm-hmm. If you don't think you're doing anything wrong, whose standard are you holding yourself accountable to? Mm-hmm. So it put me on this curiosity buzz for figuring out where does happily ever after come from anyway, because it's the standard that we are all holding ourselves to. So I started to research it, and I found out it's 400 years old. It started in Venice, Italy, of all places,
when people were only living 30 years.
The lifespan was less than 40 years of age. And there was a law on the books at the time that said a noble person could not, it was against the law for a noble person to marry a commoner.
Oh, interesting.
And if you look at the happily ever after stories, all of them end with a commoner marrying upward. Upward mobility. Everyone is safe now. The reason why the lifespan was so low, that number is so low, is because half the children died before the age of 16. So it's no small matter. We have to look at these cultural constructs as coming out. They were emergent out of a particular cultural context. And when I saw that, I thought, well, that's not our cultural context.
Sure, right.
And actually, it's very rare that somebody just meets one person, marries them, and lives with that person happily for the rest of their lives. There are people who do that, but it's the exception and not the rule. And that actually what is most common is serial monogamy, where we are you know, actually, most of us are slated to have at least two or three significant relationships mm-hmm. in our lifetime. So while I am...
I'm well past that one.
Most of us are, too. Right. Most of the people I know. That's yeah. just what I read. I have to stay to the facts as much as I can, but that's not my experience either. So when I looked at that and I thought, okay, so how can we do this better? Because inside of that expectation that is kind of an unexamined expectation mm-hmm. that we have of ourselves, of others, we've never actually learned how to do this well. Mm-hmm. And as I began to research, like, what's actually happening in the body and in the brain when we're breaking up, and it's quite severe. Mm-hmm. Breakups are one of the biggest traumas that any of us will ever go through sometimes.
Yes. Why they write so many songs about them.
Yeah.
It's right? true.
It's just the pain,
it's
like
the worst.
None other.
Which yeah. is why so many people stay in relationships. They're far terrified. Past their due date.
100%.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're terrified.
Terrified.
But we understand it. If you start to look at the brain science, our brains on a breakup are the exact same brain patterns of someone who's undergoing the death of a loved one.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd love to believe that for sure.
And when we feel rejected, it actually triggers the same place in the brain as physical pain. Mm. And that's why if you've ever been in a bad breakup, people will mm-hmm. complain of feeling like their skin is on fire. Mm-hmm. It hurts physically. Yeah. So people have started doctors have started to prescribe aspirin. Take an aspirin when you're going
wow.
through a breakup.
Wow.
Because it will actually help to diminish some of the symptoms. So step one in conscious uncoupling mm-hmm. is about finding emotional freedom. Because we all know the experience where you can't eat and you can't sleep, your body has taken over, and we're apt to do some really crazy things where we're kind of, because when you go into fight or flight, you are not in you're not in your rational mind.
No,
right.
So that's where a lot of people are going to court
mm-hmm.
and
when,
like,
they're still activated,
you know, flushing mm-hmm. their children's
yeah.
college fund down the toilet yeah. because they're in that fight or flight trauma.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. conscious uncoupling is the five-step process. It's not only going to help you to do this well in mm-hmm. a way that's aligned with your ethics as opposed yeah. to your overwhelming emotions, but it's going to set everybody up to win and mm-hmm. to thrive in the aftermath of that breakup so that you can create your post-divorce happy even after mm-hmm. family.
Or post-relationship, right?
Right.
Or post-relationship
yeah,
happy
mm-hmm.
even after. Mm-hmm. Now, because Gwyneth popped it into the lexicon, Gwyneth Paltrow,
yeah.
and people know it from her, mm-hmm. there's some misconceptions people have. They think that conscious uncoupling is only for people who are already on an amicable divorce path.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Or they think that conscious uncoupling is just for two people who are going to do it together. Mm-hmm. But the majority of people who do it are people who are suffering in a great deal of heart pain. Want to maybe, you know, you tear the hair out of the other person, like, you know, steal all their money out of their bank account, like all those, you know, pour mm-hmm. Clorox on all his nice suits or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever someone's going through, which is all kind of normal feelings when we're in the midst of a breakup. Mm-hmm. So conscious uncoupling really goes very deep into the center of what actually is happening mm-hmm. and helps us to be personally responsible, helps us to get into correct meaning, so we're not in false meaning, like, oh, I'll always be alone, or no sure. one will ever love me again, or mm-hmm. you know, how do we self-reflect, how do we take personal responsibility when somebody else actually did something egregious?
Mm-hmm. Now, just to segue a little bit more psychological, what about if you have a couple where one's a narcissist and one's a borderline? It's kind of common pairing, and they both think they want to do this, but they're personality dynamics don't actually permit them. Is it possible?
Well,
or
so you're talking
addict,
about okay. So you're talking about personality disorders now. So I define personality disorders as people who cannot self-reflect. Mm-hmm. They can't take personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's maybe what you were alluding to
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
So my work doesn't work for people who can't take personal
Got
responsibility.
It. That makes
yeah.
sense.
My work is for what we call the worried well.
Got it.
Right?
But what if one can?
Now, if one can, they can
still gain.
Yes.
I was thinking that.
Wonderful.
One person,
yes.
because they need to graduate, no matter how horrible and
right.
crazy and destructive the other person's being, they were the person who, they chose that person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they need to graduate from who they were when they chose that relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
If they ever hope to have happiness mm-hmm. in their life, in love. Now, I see breakups as a crossroad because either you're going to go and live a lesser life in the aftermath of heartache. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to say, oh my gosh, I never want to go through this again. I've lost everything and, you know, closed for business. And I've met people 20, 30 years later who had a bad breakup, and that was it for them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, or you're going to have a huge breakthrough, the biggest breakthrough in your life. So with the person who it was married to a narcissist, it's looking at their own patterns of invisibility mm-hmm. and their own willingness to give their power away consistently in order to source safety.
Right.
So there's a lot to work with in the person. And conscious uncoupling is a very gentle, loving, kind way to have people self-reflect. I call myself a Pied Piper because I'm wooing people. Mm-hmm. Because it's true. Like, if you can actually take personal responsibility mm-hmm. for yourself as the source of how you got into that experience...
Yeah.
Then you can say, that was my bottom, never again, and this is the specific way that I showed up. I never shared my feelings and needs. Mm-hmm. I always, you know, put the other person before me. I disappeared myself. I didn't believe in myself.
Sure.
I gave power to make all the decisions to the other person because I didn't have the courage to stand in my own convictions. You know, all of these things. Now, people will do this to some extent, and what they will do is they will say things like, well, I have low self-esteem, so I couldn't stand up for myself. I couldn't speak up for myself. Or they'll say, you know, they'll say, well, my father, you know, never showed respect to my mother, so I learned to be timid. So, in other words, they're victimized not just by the other person, but now they're victimized by their own consciousness.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I always, with those people, I always say, see if you can change it to, I won't, or I didn't, or I wouldn't.
Right.
I wouldn't speak up.
Mm-hmm. Not I can't.
I love that.
I can't.
That's great.
I wouldn't speak up. And I wouldn't speak up because I wouldn't risk losing the other person. And that was a decision I made. That was a choice I made. And the moment you restore choice...
You're conscious.
Then you're conscious.
Yeah.
That's right. So that's actually step two.
I got that riddle.
You
did!
You beat me to the punchline. So that's actually the second step, is becoming, reclaiming your power in your life, which has everything to do about being personally responsible. And the other thing is to help people to self-reflect in a way that's growth-oriented, mm-hmm. because a lot of us will, you know, when we make a mistake, it's so hard for us to make mistakes. It's so hard for us to own it, mm-hmm. especially when the consequences that, you know, are that you lose a relationship with somebody and you're devastated by it. So we tend to go into a very disempowered way of asking ourselves questions, i.e., what the F is wrong with me?
Yeah,
why can't I ever get this right? So to help people to form questions like, okay, how exactly did I give my power away? What was motivating me to do that? What could I do differently moving forward? Mm-hmm. You know, and so that you're really fostering development. And what we want to get to is, what's the amends you're making to yourself so that you can trust yourself mm-hmm. moving forward? And what I always say, to just to help people, and, you know, another one of my little Pied Piper tricks is, look, 97% clearly the other person's fault. Can we look at your
3%? Yes, of course. I'm going to be using that.
Yes, me too.
You.
I love that because it's perfect. Because, yeah, I can see my clients being like, all right, I can look at the
3%.
I can imagine a scenario, and tell me if you've encountered this, that a couple decides to uncouple, and they both do the work in this book, and they come back and they talk about it, and they mm-hmm. become friends and friendly, and that may sometimes rekindle the spark between them?
I definitely have people recoupling after doing conscious uncoupling, because it teaches you those skills you actually need to have your relationship go well.
Right.
And what I'm doing is I'm setting people up for their next relationship to have it go better.
Which could be with the same person.
Which could be with the same person. That's right.
Because some people just argue over the same thing. They're so entrenched and so stuck, and they're waiting for the other person to change.
Yeah. One of my coaches who came in to become a conscious uncoupling coach came in because He did conscious uncoupling. He was heartbroken. He lost his girlfriend. He learned so much from it that he went back, repaired the relationship, and they just got married.
Aww, I love it.
That. This is great.
Are you invited to the wedding?
I was invited. I couldn't go. I had something else on, but I was invited. And the two of them are actually teaching about relationship together.
Nice.
Oh yeah. My God, that's so
they
great.
Teach classes on how to make relationships
that's
work.
Beautiful.
Now. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
It's really sweet.
So did you end up coupling again?
I'm not coupled right now, but I have some, you know, magic happening.
At the oh, moment,
good. That's great.
I'm not officially coupled at this moment.
But you did not become one of those women who closed off and
no,
said, no more.
Right. No. Actually, well, let me tell you this. So those we're basically kind of swimming in the waters of the first three steps in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Step three is break the pattern, heal your heart. And it's about going back to what I call your source, fracture, wound. Mm. Which was that original break in your heart where you made that false meaning, I'm alone,
the core beliefs.
You know, I'm not good enough. Yeah, those core beliefs. Mm-hmm. And really using this time where your heart is not just broken, but broken open to transform that and own the deeper truth mm-hmm. about yourself so that you never do this
sure.
again.
Mm-hmm.
And but steps four and five are about the relationship, recreating the relationship. If you have children, then you're going to want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people want to do it just because they do want to transition to friends.
Sure.
You can do steps four and five just internally, because sometimes if you're breaking up with a narcissist and you don't have children, you don't have a company, you don't have property, you might want to just say thank you very much and goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I wish you well. Sure. But how to be really at perfect peace with that person. So in steps four, it's called becoming a love alchemist, mm-hmm. which it's actually my favorite
step. I love
step.
That. Uh-huh.
And it's really about clearing the field of mm-hmm. any residual residue. There's an amends process where, you know, one of the things that really clears the field, I think that people, when they're trying to clear the air, you want to go forward, you want to clear something up, what it ends up doing is, you know, leading to another argument or more resignation, because the way we tend to do it is that we over-explain why we did what we did.
Yes.
Like, if the other person understands us well enough, then it'll be clear, which doesn't happen.
All the time.
Yes. Which doesn't happen.
No.
It doesn't. It might clear a little bit for you, but it doesn't clear it for them
exactly.
at all. What it does for them is make them trust you less, because now you clearly can't be trusted. So so the amends process actually says, you know, it's like really empathetically attuning, just mm-hmm. letting that person have their say, just, you know, being with them, giving that to them, letting yourself be touched for, you know, 20 seconds about their pain, and just, you know, let them know that you got it,
sure.
and then make an amends moving forward. And that's what repairs the energy there. Now, why do we want to do that with someone we're breaking up from? Because children are little energy sponges.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You don't have any residue in the field.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
You want to have that all cleared away.
So they don't carry it forward.
So they're not carrying it, and you can do holidays together, and you can mm-hmm. work together, and when something's going on at school, you pick up the phone, you're friendly, you're, mm-hmm. you know, supportive. Do you need this weekend? I need that weekend. I mean, my former husband and I, who I affectionately call my husband.
Husband.
I love that.
He lives downstairs for me in the same building.
Oh,
we live in the
great.
Same building. And lately my daughter, and she has her room in his apartment, because there are only two bedrooms and I need an office. So uh-huh. so lately she's been going through some things. So I'm like in their living room almost every night.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fine with that.
Yeah.
Because that's what our daughter needs right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have a great relationship.
It did a wonderful thing for my daughter Tiffany, yeah. who's now 25, and we separated when she was a baby, so she didn't know anything else. But we always lived within 7 minutes from each other. Mm-hmm. I encouraged him. I wasn't one of those women who said, she's mine and I'll give you the rights to see your child. I was like, she's both of ours. You have just as much authority and right to parent her as I do. We will always communicate. He would come over 2-3 times a day, because frequency was good when they're that young. And all the way through, even now as adults, I have him over for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't say I was completely consciously uncoupled, but certainly rose to the behavior of that. So now I'm going to read some more about this.
Well,
really,
I don't know that I am either. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I'm laying out is something to aspire to.
Sure.
It's a path. Mm-hmm. Like parenthood is a spiritual discipline, right? Really.
Yeah, like,
yes. I know.
You know?
I'm thinking that as you're talking. Yes.
You know, this is another one.
Yeah.
But this is,
sure.
you know, and in a way, if you are parents, it's what's required of you. We do the best for our kids that we can. And
sure.
and most of us, why we're more willing in our generation? Like, why now is this conscious uncoupling coming up? Well, again, conscious uncoupling was like the first book of a genre, but you see right after it, there's like a flood of other books. It's an idea whose time has come, because most of us we're like the generation that grew up from that divorce generation back in the 80s and 90s, where nobody knew how to divorce. I mean, No Fault was, people didn't really divorce up until No Fault in 1969. Reagan was governor of California when he instigated No Fault in the state of California. He said it was the biggest mistake of his political career because it unleashed, you know, hundreds of thousands of divorces.
Yes.
So, and nobody knew about the biology, that all the stuff I'm mapping out in conscious, like, nobody knew. So they just behaved badly. I mean, my parents behaved horribly. And very, a lot of us who are kind of, you know, over 50 now have that experience. So, and by the way, gray divorce, those of us who are over 50, since I mentioned over 50, is the fastest demographic, rising demographic of divorce. People who've been married for 20, 30 years.
Oh, right. That's so interesting.
Children grown.
Yeah.
Children are grown, and time for a new adventure.
Right.
Sure.
This is what I'm saying about this different context. We don't just live till 38 anymore in one town where there was no upward mobility to anything. You were going to live in that town and die in that town, and there's happily ever after.
Well, we're expected to have five careers in our lives with baby boomers and growth longevity. So I can't imagine that we're only determined to have one relationship.
Yeah
so it's all true. I'm also curious to your thoughts about, do you think, though, that women in menopausal years has also something to do with a higher divorce rate?
I don't know.
The man is leaving the woman because of her hormones.
Okay.
But women get clearer.
Yeah, yeah.
I just became much more independent in my worldview, my self-confidence, all this. I less care about what somebody thinks about my looks.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff, and made more peace with my body and who I am. So that, I could see people being intimidated by that.
I really love that. Well, I think that we understand, you know, when we're in our 50s and our 60s and maybe even in our 70s, right? Like, or 80s, like, we're not slowing down. We don't have to. Like, all of the images that I had of my grandmother when she was 60. Like,
oh my God.
I can't even believe it. Like, what were they thinking?
Right.
Like, we're just getting started.
Sure,
So I think anybody who's kind of inspired, and I think that there is, like, something that is waking up for women in particular right now. I mean, I certainly know that for younger women, but I do know it for older women. That tends to be the women who I've been working with for the last decade, and women are on fire. There's a lot that we want to contribute to this world, and we see that there are things that need to be course corrected. So we are, you know, we're not slowing down.
Speaking of slowing down, we have to slow down here because we're almost at the end of our show. This was fantastic. Oh my goodness.
And
I just love inside the book, you have these little quotes from all these different people, this quick little thing that are just amazing. Like, anyone who has lost something they thought was theirs forever finally comes to realize that nothing really belongs to them.
And this one, too, I love this.
Coelho.
And I love this. Eventually, everything goes away. Elizabeth Gilbert. I love that.
Because
we hold on so tight to
so much. I know.
We've been talking with Catherine Woodward Thomas, who is absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. I know you
delightful,
have a coach training.
Thank you for letting me just invite people to check it out. Yeah. If you go to my website, CatherineWoodwardThomas.com, you will find right at the top there an invitation to find out about the coach training that is coming up this summer. It's one of my favorite things to do, is teach people who either therapists or a psychologist, but also people who are lay people in a 6-month program who are those kinds of people who really want to help people. So this particular one is Calling in the One.
Love it.
Fantastic.
And Catherine is spelled with a K.
Right.
Yes,
Catherine Woodward Thomas.
Good. Wonderful. Thank you so much. This is just amazing.
Thank you.
I can't wait to read this book from cover to cover. We never have enough time to read our
books.
We just acquire so many books, but this one is just absolutely amazing. And I forgot, who do we have next week?
Next week, I think, is Breaking Up Busy.
Breaking Up Busy.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about that.
But
awesome. Okay. Have a good week, everybody. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.